From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-7790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Coming up in early July, we're going to have a couple of days probably where we'll have some best of or special programs as we approach Independence Day. And as we do that, I also want to remind you that there's a free event coming to Balloon Fiesta Park on July 1st. This is going to be a big event, Freedom Celebration, which really always is. I mean, it's been at Isotopes Park and it's covered the campus at Calvary Church. But this year at Balloon Fiesta Park, we expect to see thousands of people out for Freedom Celebration. Again, a free event. Tell everyone, bring someone with you. Saturday, July 1st, and really the activity gets underway that afternoon at about 4:30. The gates will open. There'll be food trucks out there and the kids zone, just a place for the kids to have a blast. Plenty of grass out there. Remember, Balloon Fiesta Park. And the extreme sports demo with the riders from Nitro Circus. Lots of music this year. We always appreciate the music from the Calvary Worship Team. This year, welcoming to the stage Sarah Reeves, who was here, just a couple weeks ago at Calvary Church as a special worship guest when Eric Metaxas was in the pulpit. And Andy Mineo will be part of the celebration as well on July 1st. And Crowder. So lots of great worship music and music in general. The main event, though, the message from Skip Heitzig, the good news of the gospel, is a wonderful opportunity. Listen, every year at Freedom Celebration, we see people who, for the very first time, celebrate their freedom in Christ. So, as I already said, make sure to tell everyone, bring someone with you. And after the message, there'll be a great fireworks display, one of the best of the year. And it is a free event, free parking. As far as getting into the park, to expedite it for everyone, consider bringing your things in a clear bag, because they're checking all the bags, backpacks, purses, stuff as people come in. So be aware of that and look for all the details at freedomabq.com. On that website, you can actually sample some of the music from the artists that'll be playing at Freedom Celebration. Pretty cool setup this year on the website, freedomabq.com. And with Father's Day just around the corner this Sunday, want to make sure you know about, and you'll hear about it if you continue listening, Where's Dad documentary TV special is coming to KRQE TV 13. The special hosted by Skip Heitzig is this Sunday, June 18th, Father's Day at 4 p.m. We hope you'll tune in and check that out. Today's guest on ABQ Connect, back in studio, it's Ray Mondragon with the New Mexico
Creation Science
Fellowship. And Tuesdays, which I guess yesterday, did you guys meet at 7 o'clock?
No, it's next week.
Next week, okay. The third Tuesday.
Third Tuesday of the month
At Faith Church, Moon and Central. You can go and join in the conversation, hear from various speakers. A really great opportunity to join in with the Creation Fellowship of New Mexico, Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. And Ray, when I host the show and have you in, it's like I'm auditing a class.
Yeah.
I say auditing because I might jot down a few things, but I can't regurgitate everything that we've learned. But some of, you throw enough of it against the wall and some of it sticks.
Well, hopefully we'll repeat some of it today.
I think it was just Jared, our engineer, yesterday. One of the things that has really stuck with me as we've talked about creation is just the thought of fossil graveyards and how much sense they make. when you think about,
right.
We talked about it when you first brought it up, a small model of that being, after a storm, seeing the deposits of leaves or rocks or whatever, wherever you can see where the water had flowed after it's gone.
And normally you don't see fossils in that environment it takes more catastrophic events.
Right.
But to actually create a fossil.
But the deposit reminded me of what you've talked about, the fossil graveyards having that catastrophic event, and understand, oh yeah, that totally makes sense. They all kind of were washed away and deposited at various places, probably depending on the topography around the globe.
Yep. Well, in the last few months, I'm hoping that we've given enough evidence, scientific evidence, to convince people that there actually was a flood.
Worldwide,
as described, what I was going to say, as described by the Bible, and the Bible makes no bones about it. It's worldwide. All of the language is universal language.
I don't know if you listened to yesterday's show. Yesterday, did you happen to hear it?
No. Yesterday,
no judgment.
Yesterday, I was getting a haircut for for your radio audience.
Oh, there you go. hairdo for radio. but yesterday we had Rabbi Kurt Schneider on, who is taking back the rainbow. And we talked about the rainbow.
Right.
It was
a sign of the covenant.
Yeah, and he's got an event coming up in late July where he's encouraging people to get out and share the truth of the rainbow in love and peace, and have opportunity to share Christ, which we can do when we can talk to people about creation as well.
Absolutely. In fact, creation is the foundation for the rest of the Bible.
Right.
And it's the foundation for the gospel message as well. In fact, the Genesis flood tells us that God takes sin seriously in that he intervened and judged sin in a very spectacular way that affected all mankind. So,
and you and I, just in these couple minutes here, have already reviewed a little bit, but we're going to take a little time for you to walk through what people may, if they weren't tuned in for other broadcasts, they may have missed, and a little tease on this, that later in the show, we're going to address some of the things that happened during the Mount St. Helens eruption, which you and I off the air were talking about. That was 43 years ago.
Yeah.
43 years ago.
Yep.
Wow. I wasn't graduated from high school. I was kind of a young guy.
Yeah.
But I do remember it. Actually at the time I didn't realize, because, it may have happened right before I became a Christian. But yeah, I have since heard some of what you're going to talk about today. Pretty interesting.
Yeah. It's very spectacular. It's almost like God is saying, hey, wake up. Look what I can do.
Right.
I'll show you on a small scale what I can do. And if I can do it on a small scale, just imagine if I do it on a worldwide scale. Yeah. And there's a lot of evidence that...
And we'll get to that.
The geologists have been awakened to from that event.
Yeah. Okay, so how far back would you like to review here?
Well, let me give a kind of an overview of... Yeah. Most of the science, obviously, I'm just going to touch on it, but we started with looking at a more recent model. In fact, it's almost 40 years old as well. Brought about by John Baumgartner, who's a geophysicist. And in his studies at Los Alamos National Lab and his work there, he came across some evidence and realized that that was evidence for a Genesis flood. And he was actually able to do a lot of research in that area for several years, created a finite element model that the world's largest computer could barely handle at the time, and demonstrated the possibility of a mechanism for the Genesis flood. And there's actually evidence that you can look at that people have discovered that is available that somewhat gives testimony to some of the ideas that he's putting forth. For example, the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, a long ridge from pole to pole, nearly, that is volcanic. And it's like a seam, or you might even say like a zipper, where all geophysicists agree it's moving apart at a very slow rate. But Baumgartner's model says that you can have the right conditions – to have a runaway subduction of these tectonic plates, and more than likely the continents were separated, and that was the mechanism for the Genesis flood. So we spent a whole session on that. I probably went into more detail there than we needed to. But we've been looking at evidence also from paleontology. And the first question I asked is, why are fossils not formed today in general? And the reason for that is creatures, when they die, they're eaten by other creatures or they disintegrate. You have to have special conditions for fossils. And we observe fossils all over the world. And in fact, in surprising places like on top of the Sandia Crest. And they're in all of the sedimentary rock layers all over the world. So that argues for catastrophic events all over the world and evidence for a Genesis flood. So we interpret the geological column from a biblical worldview, a different perspective. We're looking at the same data. But the data speaks louder in support of what we have in the book of Genesis.
And we keep making a point to say worldwide flood because there is a portion of the church.
The majority of the church.
Which is a portion.
Yep.
7/8 of the whatever it is that believe that the flood recorded in Genesis was localized and wasn't worldwide, which is not what we're saying here. We believe in a worldwide flood.
Well, the evidence points to that. And the only reason the church has adopted that is because most theologians are not familiar with science. And most Bible teachers, theologians are intimidated by the scientific community that overtly states that there's no evidence in the geological record for a flood of the magnitude that's described in the Bible.
Wrong.
Exactly.
See, so, you taught me that much.
Yeah, so you don't want to sound stupid. So as a theologian, you say, well, maybe that flood was only in a local area. And if we look there, then perhaps we might find evidence for it. But in the Mesopotamian plain, there's nothing different in that plain than anywhere else around the world. You have the same evidence. You have the same evidence for a universal flood as you find all over the world, including the United States, all over. In fact, we use Sandia Crest as a visual, as an example, where you have a layer that was laid down more than likely by the Genesis flood.
The Pennsylvanian layer. I'm listening.
So the whole area of paleontology, and there's sub arguments along those lines. You mentioned fossil graveyards where it is clear that something very massive displaced thousands of animals of different varieties, swept them away, placed them in one location, and they all died together. We call that fossil graveyards. And they occur all over the world as well. So we have these catastrophic events, and I think they're all related to the Genesis flood. We talked about the existence of coal petrology. That argues for a Genesis flood, and really the secularist has to jump through hoops to try to explain these large deposits of coal, and they really don't have a good explanation. Same with oil. We call that petrophysics. Then we spent our whole time last time looking at the geological record. So we have evidence from plate tectonics, from volcanism, from paleontology, from coal petrology, petrophysics, and we spent the whole time last time looking at the whole area of geology. What do you find in these layers that exist all over the world? And the bottom line is, in our interpretation, creation scientists, young Earth that is, see the Cambrian layer. Now, this is what all geologists know about. It's the bottom layer of the geological column. Below it is what's called the Great Unconformity. And what geologists mean by that is you have a radically different kind of rock below the Cambrian layer. everything above the great unconformity is sedimentary rock. In other words, laid down by water, more than likely. In fact, the evidence points to that. So you have, in some places, like at the Grand Canyon, you have a mile depth of all of these various layers that were laid down by rushing waters, and the Genesis flood is a better explanation of how they were laid down. And then today, what we're going to talk about is what are the, some of the after effects of the flood that we can observe? That gives evidence for a worldwide flood as well.
And those layers we see, you know, as we look at the Grand Canyon, or like you said, even looking at the crest.
Well, everywhere you go.
Right.
I mean, you can see evidence no matter where you go.
It'd be like, a glass with different sediments or whatever in it.
Right.
That if you leave it long enough,
it'll settle out.
It'll settle out and separate into layers.
Yeah, muddy water. In fact, you can shake up the glass, put it down, and it'll organize itself in these layers.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you can do an experiment there with your kids and explain it to them.
Love it. And, you know, we've said several times while talking about this, you know, that science proves the biblical account of the flood. And the truth is, the sciences.
Many of them.
Many of them that you just walked through. Do that, it's hard to look at the evidence and find any other conclusion. However, we'll continue to share, we have more to talk about today, including scientific evidence, more scientific evidence for worldwide flood. And we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll jump right into it. Can you do that?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll do that after this on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Oh, you heard during the break there a spot talking about the resource from Connect with Skip that's available this month, the Where's Dad documentary. A reminder that documentary will be a TV special airing on KRQE TV 13. This Sunday, Father's Day at 4 p.m., so make plans to check that out. Hosted by Skip Heitzig, Where's Dad documentary TV special this weekend on KRQE TV 13, 4 p.m. Sunday. And in studio with us, Ray Mondragon is here with the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. And, you know, I fail to mention often, Ray, and I very much appreciate the other things you do, including the website you've set up, the ForHisGloryNM.com, which is another place you can go to hear the archives of these conversations.
Right.
A lot
of creation science stuff that we're not even covering here.
Right. If you want to go into more depth, you can go there. And you keep yourself busy as a professor at Chafer Seminary. How's that going?
Well, it's going good, and we're looking forward to a good year. In fact, if I may, I would like to little promote the fall schedule.
Very good. What's going on?
And basically, we're going to have all of the languages, Greek and Hebrew, that you can introductory courses. And if you've already had the first year of either one of them, there's also the intermediate courses, so they're available. Several theology courses, and one that I think is the most important. In fact, it kind of lays the foundation for all of the others, is the one that I'm going to teach. That it's called Hermeneutics and Bible Study Methods. Hermeneutics, fancy name for principles of interpretation. In other words, what are the proper principles that you want to apply when you're studying the Word, when you're looking into the Word? And I believe that every believer, if they're serious about growing in Christ, they need to be able to get into the Word for themselves, and I would encourage them to take this course. You can audit it, and in fact, I have many students. I'm thinking of a housewife now with six kids that's taken virtually all the courses that I offer, and she's just interested in learning in order to better homeschool her kids.
Very good.
So we have people like that. Not all of them are seeking
degrees.
Uh-huh. So someone can take just a course here. Kind of
taking the Peter route.
Well, take what you need.
I'm just saying he probably didn't hang something on the wall after hanging out with Jesus for a few years.
Right.
but he sure got an education.
Absolutely.
Depending on what you need, a diploma is important. But like you mentioned, there's people who just audit, like this homeschooling mom. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
Who's just equipping herself to equip her kids.
Yeah. And she has a ministry outside as well. But,
right. Well, it's chafer.edu or chafer.edu for the details
of the website.
chafer.edu. Man, what else do you do that I forget about?
Well, I just got back from Israel, took a group.
That's right.
Israel.
Are you going to do that again next year? Or?
No. I always say this is the last time I'm going to do it, but. Yeah. People come up and say, hey.
It's the last time, Ray, prior to it being remodeled. Because you will be in New Jerusalem.
Exactly.
So we are in the midst of, actually jumping into new content today. And as I mentioned, a little bit later in the hour, we'll talk about the evidence during the Mount St. Helens eruption. But where are we headed now?
Well, if you study the biblical text, you're going to notice that there's little statements. You could even consider them scientific statements that are describing the flood. It's not just simply theology. It's actually describing an event that took place. And if you put together these different statements, you can see that we talked about the cause of the flood. There's a statement on it. Chapter 7, verse 11. And the first stage would be an inundation stage where you have waters that would rush as a result of the tectonic effects and sweep across continents, and everything in its path would be swept away. And then you have a receding stage, and that's where all of the layers would
settle
and accumulate. But then after that, there's indicators, not only in the text, but particularly in science, that the Earth would have to go through something of a stabilization. This is a radical event that took place. So just from the material sense, you'd have to have certain things beginning to stabilize, a decrease in these rapid movement of tectonic plates, a decrease of volcanic action, which would be an abundance, like we mentioned, the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. So a decrease in all of these, and you'd also have the washing away of waters in certain areas, and that leaves evidence behind of something catastrophic in terms of the waters receding. So that's what I'd like to get into for this segment, at least, is some of that evidence of what you have when the Earth is beginning to stabilize. And by the way, you could even include the Ice Age. So you have climatological phenomenon associated with the Genesis flood as well. And there's some reasons why immediately after the flood, the Earth would have gone into an Ice Age. I wasn't planning on mentioning it, but we can do it if you're interested.
I'm kind of interested in the science. Why would a worldwide flood end up causing an ice age?
An ice age.
Well, I guess in order to create ice, you need water. There's plenty of
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Well, if you study the literature, you find out that scientists have come up. In fact, I read a book that said there's at least 25 views as to what may have caused an ice age. And none of them have caught on because they're not biblical. But if you just think about it, that tectonic effect that I mentioned, where you have the separating of the continents at the bottom of the ocean, at least the Mid-Atlantic and also the Pacific Rim, the Ring of Fire, you're going to have volcanic action. So you're going to have hot lava coming in contact with water. It's going to increase the temperature of the oceans. Now, you don't have to have a huge increase. And Michael Ord, who's written books and kind of an expert in this area, he explains that all you need is just a few degrees. And if the oceans are warmer, the natural byproduct of that is you have more evaporation.
Okay.
And with more evaporation, it's possible, and also along with some of the volcanic action, you can begin to get more clouds along with the dust from volcanoes as well, and you have a runaway cooling situation. So you have increased snow and not enough time for it to melt, and now you're beginning to accumulate it, and then it stabilizes. It gets to a point of stabilization, and we're living in the after effects. We can see glaciers today that are as a result of the Genesis flood.
Okay, I want to mirror back, kind of make sure I'm tracking with you, because we're talking about the flood basically causing the ice age.
The after effects of the flood.
There's all this water. And volcanic activity creating warmer temperatures in the oceans, which causes more evaporation. And if the volcanoes have erupted and there's ash in the air, which essentially is the condensation nuclei? Is that what the water is attaching itself to create clouds?
No, not necessarily. It just, shielding effect of the sun's rays where you don't get as much heat.
Okay.
So you have colder winters, and you have a runaway effect that...
So with the evaporation, you are getting the clouds, and like you said, more...
And the accumulation of glaciers.
Yeah.
And then it stabilizes, and we're in the after effects of the ice age, essentially.
Right. Which so many like to attribute to something else.
Yep. We could spend an hour on it.
No, we're not going to go there. Not interested. Okay.
Anyway, there's all these effects that are better explained by this flood model than what the seculars have come up with. And like I said, there are at least 25 different explanations for the ice age. In fact, most climatologists would even propose that we're just looking at the last ice age. But, there's not any evidence of any prior ice ages as well.
Okay. We're actually up against the break, believe it or not, and we'll take a quick break. And a little tease, what's on the other side of the break?
Well, let's talk about Mount St. Helens.
All right. There it is. We've been teasing it the whole show. We're going to talk about that event that happened over 40 years ago. So if you remember the eruption, you're older than some. We'll get to it when we return with Ray Mondragon with the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico right after the break on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
All right, today a look back in history with Ray Mondragon of the Creation Science Fellowship in New Mexico. When he's here in general, we take a look back at history because we're looking at the Bible and what it has to say about creation.
Right.
And particularly this year, really focused on the flood, the Genesis flood account of a worldwide flood. And a little more recent history we're taking a look at now, how Mount St. Helens and things that happened there.
In some of our lifetimes.
Yeah, right. In some of our lifetimes, 43 years ago, and how evidence there. Scientists saw things happen there, right, Ray?
Yes.
I'm sure you'll get to it, but yeah. I've heard several times that prior to that, those same scientists would have said something quite different.
Absolutely. Yeah, it somewhat awakened the whole geological community. Now, not all of them have latched onto it, but those that have been impressed with what happened on, May 18th, I believe, 1980, Mount St. Helens actually exploded. It was not just a volcanic eruption. It was an explosion mountain.
If you've never seen that, it's almost like time-lapse photography. I don't know if there's actual video, but I've seen pictures, within seconds of each other. And it's like the whole side of the mountain just exploded.
Just blew up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let me mention a couple of things before we get into Mount St. Helens, because there are a lot of after effects of the Genesis flood that are observable. In fact, if you like to take your family on trips and you're visiting some of these sites like the Grand Canyon, Bryce Canyon, and many others. In fact, if you visit the Badlands in the Washington, Montana area, all of that was created as a result of the after effects of the Genesis flood, when waters were receding and beginning to, the earth is beginning to stabilize. In our flood model, we would also say, and there's actual evidence for this, that the Grand Canyon was formed as an after effect of the Genesis flood, because you have all of the layers already. And then you had another catastrophic event on a smaller scale that washed out the Grand Canyon, not over millions and millions of years, but in a relatively, in a matter of days, even hours. And some of the evidence, if you're familiar with Western Colorado and Eastern Utah, there is evidence that you can visit some of these sites of ancient lakes. You can see the water line on many of them. And if you trace that, you realize that at one time there were these huge lakes. Now, we as creation scientists believe that probably as a result of an earthquake or something, those waters in those lakes were released, and in a very rapid way, they went down through the Grand Canyon. Grand Canyon not being there, but that's where the waters went, and they cut. And some of that rock would have been relatively soft. It had not solidified yet. So we believe that that would have been one of the after effects. And some of the evidence are these lakes that you can find. You can also go to where I grew up in Taos, and you can see not a Grand Canyon, but a canyon, the Rio Grande Canyon.
The gorge is beautiful.
The gorge, yeah.
I have a hard time when I'm driving up to Taos.
Keeping your eyes on the road.
Yeah, when I get to the point where you kind of get to you're that elevation. Yeah, it's just beautiful.
Yeah. But the flood model would explain that in a rapid fashion, and there's evidence of this as well, physical evidence, that was carved out in a relatively short period of time. And in fact, most features like that, I mentioned the Badlands, but most features all over the earth would have been formed as a result of the receding waters of the flood. You have these, in New Mexico, you have these mesas, and you have these lower elevations. Well, the mesa would be the remains of what water didn't erode away. Rather than over millions and millions of years, think in terms of a Genesis flood and the after effects of it.
Well, and again, on a smaller scale, when I think of, when water flows, we live on a street where, quite honestly, we get like a river down our street when it rains. Mm-hmm. And you see, not only we talked about the comparison to the fossil graveyards with, objects that are left behind, but think of those. They're almost like sandbars,
but they're layers.
If you looked at those plateaus you're talking about from an airplane or a higher elevation, higher than 30,000 feet, it would look very similar.
Yeah. You can easily imagine rushing waters, wiping a lot of the land masses away and leaving these little spots.
Right.
That apparently had harder rock or whatever the direction of the water or whatever would have allowed for these mesas.
Right.
So there's evidence all over the earth for all of the different stages of the Genesis flood and particularly the after effects. Mount St. Helens would be a more recent after effect. In fact, all volcanism would be an after effect of the flood as well, a stabilization. Occasionally you'll have an eruption, but closer to the Genesis flood, you would have had more eruptions and more tectonic effects. So It's almost, like I said at the very beginning, it's almost like God said, hey, I can show you what I can do on a small scale. And if this doesn't impress you, then nothing will.
Yeah, right, right. And it was impressive, as I already mentioned, just seeing the time-lapse photography of, I mean, imagine half of the Sandia is just, boom, gone.
Blown up.
Yeah. Yep.
In fact, I've got some numbers here if you're interested in it. Scientists have estimated that on that May 18th event, in fact, they were observing it ahead of time. There was a few rumblings, and there was this bulge on the side of the mountain, and there were scientists studying it and recording and photographing, etc. And then on May 18th, the mountain, the side of the mountain, just blew out. And they estimate that it was the equivalent of an atomic bomb exploding every second over a period that would have accumulated to about 30,000 medium-sized atomic bombs.
Wow.
So tremendous energy released. And the main thing is not just that energy that was released, but the effects that took place after. And that's what we'd like to discuss. In other words, things that scientists saw.
Right.
And just as you mentioned.
In a matter of hours.
Yeah, in a matter of hours and days. The mountain itself, I thought I had a number here, but about 1,000 foot of the top of the mountain was totally blasted. And that whole area, about an area extending about 10 miles. All of the trees were destroyed.
Yeah.
In fact, it looked like a moonscape. If you had walked the ground there, you would have thought, am I on the moon? Because over 200 million cubic yards of material were displaced. Now, that's a number I can't even imagine in my head. And they measured 250 square miles of that whole forest area, essentially destroyed. All of the trees knocked over, blasted away, and some of those trees accumulated in a lake. It's called Spirit Lake, right at the foot, up at higher elevation, but it's at the foot of Mount St. Helens itself. And things like layering, in other words, this material that was displaced, some of it ran down the mountain and eroded the side of the mountain. So you have these mud flows mixed in with a little bit of lava material. They call it poly or pyroclastic flows. And those flows produced layering. Not many, but enough that if you would go back and look at some of those layers, I've got a photograph of one that's 25 feet deep. That's the scale of some of the layers that you'll find in the geological column if you go to the Grand Canyon or elsewhere where you see these layering. 25-foot layer, and it's solidified. So the pressures turn it into rock. It's not soft. And if you look at it, in other words, if you took a scientist and said, give me an estimate of the age of this layer, and he would take his measurements, and it looks very much like any other layer that you find in the geological column, and he would come up with probably maybe a few million, 100,000, a few 100,000 years to form.
Wrong.
And, yep. Formed in 5 hours.
Yeah.
5 hours.
Look what God can do.
That's absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we're up against another break. We're in studio with Ray Mondragon from the Creation Science Fellowship in New Mexico, taking a look again at how science just supports the Genesis flood account for a worldwide flood. And we're going to come back and wrap up our discussion for today and more on what was found during the Mount St. Helens eruption 43 years ago. That's coming up next on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Thanks for joining us, and we return to a conversation with Ray Mondragon from the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. They meet on the third Tuesday of each month at 7 o'clock?
Yes.
At
Faith Bible.
Faith Bible Church on Central, and you are invited. The website for Creations is CSFABQ?
No, CSFNM.org.
CSFNM.org, and you're invited. It's free to attend, and either conversations or hearing from various speakers.
We love young people.
Yeah.
Public school kids, homeschoolers.
Yep. Private school. What?
Private.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Come get learned at the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. Again, that's the third Tuesday of each month at Faith Bible Church on Central near Moon. Right at Moon.
Right on the corner.
Yeah, right on the corner of Moon and Central. We are in the midst of, actually, we're coming near to wrapping up our discussion about
the Genesis flood.
The Genesis flood and how science supports the biblical account for a worldwide flood as delineated in Scripture in Genesis. Right now, we're in the midst, we're almost through talking about the evidence that came about during Mount St. Helens. And then we'll let you know, stick around. We're going to let you know when Ray comes back next month, what's coming up, some pretty cool stuff.
Good. Well, one of the things I've been trying to impress your audience with, because the overwhelming view of the church is not aware of the things that we're talking about, because we don't get into the sciences that much as theologians. But the secular world says there's no evidence for a Genesis flood. There's no evidence in the geological record of a Genesis flood. So the church has adopted this local flood idea because they're so adamant in their statement. But this evidence that we've been presenting, I hope that I've impressed your audience that there's actually overwhelming scientific evidence from many areas. And I don't remember, we've spent, 6 months on this topic?
Yeah. Yeah,
looking at just the science, all the way from plate tectonics, paleontology, coal petrology, geology, sedimentation, erosion, all of these, climatology, we mentioned climatology last time. So there is actually overwhelming scientific evidence that supports the flood. And at Mount St. Helens, it appears that God said, let me show you something. Just observe. You're a scientist. Watch what's going to happen here. And Mount St. Helens was one of the most observed geological phenomenons in our lifetime, basically. So they have all of the recordings, they have all of the measurements, they have all of the data to demonstrate that there can be catastrophic effects on a small scale, the scale within one state, you might say, of the United States. And if God can do that on a small scale, what prevents him as an omnipotent God from doing something on a worldwide scale?
Right.
So along with all of the other evidence that we've been providing, Mount St. Helens is powerful evidence of the Genesis flood. Last segment, we talked about rapid erosion that would have taken place as a result of not only the explosion, but also the melting of large quantities of snow on the side of Mount St. Helens. That went down a canyon and basically swept away everything in its path, just like what we were describing of the Genesis flood. Trees, rocks, mud, animals, everything in its path was swept away. And after the eroding, that material had to settle somewhere. So we have sedimentation. And on the day of the explosion, you already had things falling out of the sky. So you have a layer of what's called airfall debris from the explosion itself. And it's in the range about 25, 30 feet. And then in the same year, in June 12th, we had another event, another explosion that eroded more of the mountain and produced that other layer that I described in the last segment, a 25-foot layer. And then you had another event 2 years later, 3/19/1992, that produced another layer on top of it. So you have three very distinct layers that were laid down in rapid succession, not on the same day, but relatively close, that looks very much like any other layer. You have the sharp boundaries, no erosion. You have the same material in general, just like you see in all of the layers of the Grand Canyon. So you have all of this sedimentation. You also have what is called by geologists stratification. And what that is the hardening of these rocks. In other words, they're made into rock rather than soft material. And also, like I mentioned, there's Spirit Lake, and some of the trees were blasted and covered the lake. In other words, you couldn't even see the water.
Looked like the logging company had been busy.
Absolutely. So you have all these trees, and those that have gone and observed underneath, they have discovered that because of these trees being displaced almost entirely, because you have more mass at the bottom, the root system,
right,
that absorbs more water. And because it absorbs more water, the density is higher, and therefore these trees stand up. And you have layering at the bottom of Spirit Lake, and some of these logs go through several of these layers. Remember we talked about polystrate fossils?
Yes.
A fossil that goes through several layers? You have the same phenomenon. So lots of little data like that tells us that if God can do it on a small scale, he can certainly do it on a large scale. Another very interesting phenomenon. These layers, in fact, the reason we can see the layers is because March 19th in 1992, because of some of the rumblings, Spirit Lake released a large quantity of water again and swept through that area where the sediment was deposited. And it cut out in rapid succession. In fact, in one day, it cut out a canyon. And if you take the measurements, it's a 1/40th scale Grand Canyon. So just like I described, some of the after effects, like the Grand Canyon and some of the other areas that we talked about, God said, well, let me show you what I can do here as an after effect of Mount St. Helens.
Well, that pretty much puts a cap on our discussion and the evidence for a worldwide flood that we've, like you said, we've covered for about the last 6 months. And Ray Mondragon is in studio with us from the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. Comes in about once a month, and we're going to head to a new topic when you come in next time. And actually, as we kept saying, you know, God showing us on a smaller scale. Well, even the flood, you could say, is a smaller scale when you look at
the whole universe.
The universe that he measures with the width of his hand.
Yep.
So some great things coming. We'll look at the age of the universe, old versus young Earth, and much more as we continue with Ray.
And this is one of the most controversial areas within creation science.
All right. Well, there's
something of a divide even amongst those of us that
we will get to that in July. Ray, thanks. God willing. Thanks for coming in. And a reminder, this weekend, Where's Dad? The documentary will be on Channel 13, TV 13, KRQE this Sunday, July 18th at 4 o'clock. Thanks for listening.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.